The Big Lead is brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. And before I get to all the other stuff, man, this Denver plane shedding parts. Now you just heard in the newscast that a different Boeing plane was dropping stuff from the sky on the same day. And I'm not afraid to fly in the slightest, because I've flown an awful lot in my lifetime. But I will say one of my greatest fears is the idea of being on a plane that's going down, just because it would be several minutes of just sheer human terror. And the one that I'll never forget, it was the plane, I want to say it was Germany, I don't remember where, but the pilot came out and went to the bathroom, and somebody went in to the cockpit and just started taking the plane down. But it was pretty gradual, and you hear them, they're using an axe to try to get into the cockpit, and you hear the people on the plane knowing what's happening. And then you even on the recording, this is years ago, but I remember playing it, on the recording, you even hear the wing first hit the ground, and everybody knew what was happening. But Nicole, you said that you actually take something very positive out of this Boeing Denver plane thing.
This reaction was awesome, that a plane can still land even though its engine has blown up or fallen off. So the fact that that plane still landed safely gives me a little, you know, calmness that, you know, if something happens to an engine out your window, because I think everybody looks out the window, looks at those engines, and pictures it falling apart when they get on a plane. And although you're not scared necessarily, or maybe we are, maybe it is a form of fear or whatever, but we all have those images in our brain. And the fact that these people lived through it, and that plane still landed, and that our technology, that Boeing or the engine company's technology, is that sophisticated that a plane can still land even when something that disastrous goes wrong, that made me feel good.
Yeah, I guess.
Because technical problems happen. These things happen.
But I would rather if it didn't happen. And I forgot to ask you this. Do you have any of the audio, or can you find the audio, the communications between the pilot?
Yeah, and it's in there.
In there? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Because it's unbelievable. So let me go through this here. So the plane engine kind of exploded and was on fire. And yes, I was talking to my son-in-law, who is a pilot, this weekend, and he was just telling me about the, you know, the training and the things you have to do when something like that happens, something so catastrophic. So here is the captain of that airliner and the Mayday call, and you can hear, these guys are usually pretty cool, but you can hear the tension in the pilot's voice here.
Mayday, Mayday, United 28, 328 Heavy, Mayday, Mayday aircraft.
328 Heavy, say again, please, can you call that again?
Denver departure, United 328 Heavy, Mayday aircraft, just experienced a engine failure, need a turn immediately.
328 Heavy, left or right turn?
Left turn.
Left or right turn? I'm going to make a left turn here. This guy's son on the ground walked through his front door just before the engine crashed in his front yard.
We were sitting on the couch and we heard a loud boom and it kind of rattled a little bit. And the wife and I just looked at each other and go, "Now, what was that?" This big silver object just rolled in front of our front window. And we had absolutely no idea what it was from sitting there. And then when I stood up and opened the door, I told my wife, I go, "You're never going to guess what this is." I said, "It's the front cowling of a jet engine from an airplane."
Okay, so airplane engines were fallen from the sky. And I was in suburban Denver just last weekend visiting Brock. I'm going to have to bring an umbrella next time I go. David DeLuccia, he just talked to Fox News just in the last couple of hours, and he described being on board that plane that was shedding an engine.
Completely normal. Everything was going as planned. The captain came on at about 10,000 feet, and he was giving the speech that they normally do. And before he could complete that speech, that's when the engine blew.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we kind of dropped down in altitude, and the plane just started shaking and vibrating from there on out.
Oh, Jesus. I cannot imagine the terror. And he said it was loud.
It was extremely loud. A couple thoughts went through my head. I thought it was first possibly a bomb, but if it was a bomb, we probably would have exploded. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the engine. I said, we lost an engine. And the way the plane was reacting, you kind of knew it was an engine, and it was nothing other than an engine.
And he said it was very good how the pilots kept the passengers updated on what was going on. And by the way, if there are any pilots listening, there is nothing we like more than hearing you update us if there's anything going wrong. Like, if there's severe turbulence, I like the pilots kind of talking us through that. But he said they did a really good job.
They kept coming on, and they were periodically briefing us as to what was transpiring. After they knew we lost an engine, they said that we were going to try to return back to Denver Airport and make a safe landing as opposed to an emergency landing, which was reassuring. Wow. Yeah.
Yes, I would far prefer a safe landing. And this guy, though, he said they were worried the whole time because the flames, they saw the flames. And he said, yeah, fire and all that airplane fuel just doesn't mix.
If you know the engine's on fire and you know the plane is burning, you know, fuel and fire, you're thinking you could explode at any time. And that thought really didn't leave our minds until we left the airplane. Because when we were taxiing on the tarmac, you know, you still had that thought in your mind.
And then his wife had a thought as well. And imagine the fear that you have if you have to think about something like this. They went into their overhead bags, or the bags that were in the overhead compartment, to grab their IDs.
Yeah, my wife told me that. Yeah, she's like, you know, put your ID in your pants. And I was like, why are we doing that? And she said, just in case we do go down, they can ID our bodies. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. And they were going to Hawaii, and then United got them another plane, and they had to decide, do we want to get back on a plane right away?
I did, but you know the old saying, you have to get back on the horse that you fell off of and keep doing it to get the bad memories out of your head. But it was a little unnerving, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, so, but they can fly with one engine. And as Nicole said, I guess that's reassuring, but what's going on with these Boeing planes and Pratt & Whitney engines? I believe either Pratt or Whitney should be fired for this. Okay, next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
We told you a story at the beginning of the show. It was last summer when we broke a story about a tent hospital that went up on soccer fields in Shoreline. And one of my tipsters who worked there told me that employees were asked to go out and buy cigarettes, alcohol, and marijuana edibles for the people in this tent hospital, most of whom had been homeless. And it was part of the COVID fight, they said. But it was absolutely outrageous, this notion of the taxpayers buying alcohol and drugs and cigarettes for the residents of this tent hospital. Well, now we have another story along those lines. Our friend Jason Rance, you can hear every afternoon on 770 KTTH. He has a story up at mynorthwest.com about what we're doing at another Seattle homeless shelter. And Jason joins us live. Jason, great to talk to you this afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
Where are you this week? What are you doing?
I am in Orlando all week for the CPAC conference. It actually starts on Thursday. Decided to come up a little bit early, enjoy a state of freedom from some of the COVID mandates. It's not the Wild West, as some people think. Lots of people, everyone so far, has been wearing masks, but it's a much different vibe out here.
Yes, yeah, I know. The travels that I've done the last few months, it is just night and day. Okay, so in case people weren't listening at noon today, tell us some of the stuff that you have found out about the Downtown Emergency Service Center, which is one of our government-funded homeless operations in this region.
Yeah, they are spending city funds, so taxpayer dollars, to purchase heroin pipes and what's called booty bumping kit, something I've never actually heard of. There are two flyers that are up. Several of these two flyers are up at this location at the Downtown Emergency Service Center. One of them says, new at the Navigation Center, heroin pipe. Smoking is a lower risk alternative to injection. Give it a try. You can now get three kinds of glass. They list some of them and they say, hey, you can only get one per week, but we do have other options available, extra screens and mouthpieces. Now, the other flyer promotes booty bumping, which apparently is a way to rectally inject a water-based mixture of either cocaine or meth via a syringe that just doesn't have a needle. Now, part of the reason why folks might do that, according to this flyer, is that it's a good choice if your veins are hard to hit, less risk of infection and abscesses, and less damage to skin and veins. So people have perhaps chosen to do this. It's not a very popular way, for probably obvious reasons, to inject these drugs, but taxpayer dollars are actually going to it.
Okay, here's what I'm finding hard to believe. That you pretend like you've never heard of this. I'm like the most naive human being alive, and even I knew about this. You didn't know about booty bumping?
I've never heard of that before. I found plenty of sites after Googling that I had to erase from my history. But no, I've never actually heard of that. I certainly heard of smoking heroin, chasing the dragon, if you will. But I've never heard of booty bumping.
Because I covered this years ago because frat boys were doing it with alcohol a fair amount. And that was the first time I'd heard about it. That it was, and apparently it's a way, and as you point out in your story at mynorthwest.com, that apparently you get high faster and it can be more intense or longer lasting. Here's what I just find remarkably disturbing about all of this, Jason, and that is, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, if I, heaven forbid, had a kid who was hooked on heroin, I would say, you know, honey, come home. We'll get you your old bedroom. We'll help you get clean. We'll feed you. We'll house you. And we will get you help so you can get your life back. I would not say, come home. We'll feed you. We'll house you. And you can keep using all the heroin you want because I love my kids. And if that's what love is, what is this when government is saying, we will just allow you to continue killing yourself on our dime?
Well, the DESC will say, look, this is just part of a harm reduction approach where you've got people who are going to do the drugs anyway, and it will build trust with them if we allow them to be open about their use and, for lack of a better term, and these are my words, embrace their addiction in a way that is safer than if they were just shooting up. And certainly it's true that doing it in this way is, quote unquote, safer, but it is not safe. Now, I have a moral objection to using taxpayer dollars to fund an addiction. However, if they were to come back and say, look at this data. Under this approach, we've seen a 76% increase in people actually getting treatment and getting off of their addiction. I would be forced, and you would probably before us to question some of our beliefs for the greater good of getting people off of this addiction. And I'm willing to have that conversation. But the data isn't there. The data is just simply not there. And even when I go back and I ask them specifically to tell me how many people are getting off of this addiction path to inevitable death that they're on, they don't give me any specifics. They'll say, hey, we've got some people who are going through a program. They're getting medically assisted treatment. Some people are ending up in more permanent housing. But they're not being specific as to how many people are overcoming this addiction, which is incredibly dangerous. It is difficult to do, and it is expensive. But they just don't have the data to back up this approach beyond the harm reduction model, which is objectively true. But that doesn't make what they're doing right.
Well, and I mean, the flyer that specifically says, if you can't find a vein, think about smoking these drugs. And then with an exclamation point at the end, give it a try. That is our government telling addicts to try a new way of ingesting a drug. And that is just, by any standard, that is wrong to do. But this is the depths to which we've sunk around here.
It is. And unless people start shining a giant spotlight on this, it's going to continue. There's got to be more pressure put. It's funny, when I reached out to the city, the mayor's office completely ignored my request for comment. Human Services Department, which is where the contract money essentially flows, I had several back and forths with their spokesperson, who just refuses to give me a direct answer as to whether or not they endorse the messaging in the flyer and this approach. They simply tell us what it is we already know, which is what they're doing. This is a strategy that is for harm reduction. Yes, thank you. I already know that I have access to Google. I'm trying to get them to just tell me whether or not they support it. And they refuse to answer that question, which to me means, yes, they do support it, but they don't want to say anything because they know that it's going to sound really bad to the average Seattleite. And for something to sound bad to the average Seattleite, it's got to be pretty out there.
Well, and what's so sad, too, is that, you know, anybody, you know, going back to the booty bumping, I've seen somebody injecting a syringe between their toes in a grocery store parking lot, presumably because their arms were too scarred up to be able to do it. You would think that people would have some measure of self-awareness that if you're putting a syringe up your booty, that this has to be rock bottom. And yet they're so far gone that the ingestion of the drug is all that matters. And that's just unbelievably sad to me.
It is. And, you know, as long as they're continuously putting this poison in their body, they will never see clearly. And so I can't imagine that you're ever going to get people who will truly get treatment if they're always high. They're never going to hit that rock bottom. They're never going to realize they've hit rock bottom.
You can see Jason's story at MyNorthwest.com. Are you doing your show Monday through Wednesday before CPAC begins?
I'm here all week doing my show. We've got some cool guests coming up later on in the week, including Senator Ted Cruz. So that'll be fun.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Okay. So you can hear
a little bit of
Jason
a controversy.
Live. Really? I haven't heard about it. I'll start reading more. Okay, you can hear Jason live from Orlando every afternoon, 3 to 6, on our sister station, 770 KTTH. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Jason Rantz, check out the booty bumping story at MyNorthwest.com. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Hey, it's worked so well in Seattle. Should we expand $15 an hour nationwide? That's what Democrats in Congress want to do. And I will tell you why that is so unbelievably misguided. Next on the Dory Monson Show. Just heard in the newscast, Seattle Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal is one of the people who's pushing hard for a $15 an hour national minimum wage. And all I can figure is that so many members of Congress have never worked in the private sector, because it is impossible that they can be this ignorant on economic issues. Now, we have the $15 an hour in Seattle. Here's why this is so horribly misguided. You think of what the cost of living is in Seattle or San Francisco compared to the most rural towns in Nebraska or in the Mississippi Delta or in the western oil field towns of Texas. I mean, just think of how different life is. And to suggest that everybody should get paid the same, whether they live in a very expensive urban area or an incredibly affordable rural area, it just doesn't make any sense. And then I hear some of the sound bites. And I've told you, I was a minimum wage worker for, let me do the math here. I think for 12 years. 12 years. I worked for minimum wage and even under minimum wage. When I was 11 or 12 years old, there was a tiny little grocery store on Sunset Hill in Ballard called Food Town. And I went in and I asked the owners if I could get a job. Minimum wage was $2.50 an hour. They said they couldn't pay me $2.50, but they would pay me $2 an hour cash. Off the books. Sounded good to me. I just needed some money. I just needed some dough so I could do stuff with my friends once in a while. Because they got an allowance. I never got an allowance. So I started working for $2 an hour, and I'd change out the letters on the big reader board outside, and I'd use the pneumatic crushing machine to crush and bale cardboard boxes, help stock the shelves. Good work. Hard work. $2 an hour. And then after that, I worked at Safeway for minimum wage. I worked at a print shop for $2.50 an hour. King Five, with a college degree, King Five, I worked there for, I think, 3 years. And I started at $4 an hour, which was then the minimum wage. With a college degree. I didn't care. Wasn't married yet, didn't have kids yet. I just wanted to work. It laid the foundation for everything that came after that. And that's where, you know, let me play you a couple of these sound bites on the minimum wage. Here's Nancy Pelosi, and she's saying, yeah, she thinks they're going to get a nationwide minimum wage now.
We have been in the fight for 15 for a while, and we were able to pass it in the House in the last Congress, but of course the Senate, you know, with Mitch McConnell, would just not bring it up, and nobody thought that what's-his-name would have signed it, the former occupant of the White House would have signed.
Oh, that is so clever. I'm going to hold my hands way out like she does at the end of the State of the Union. What's-his-name, the former occupant of the White House. Ooh, that's going to teach him a thing or two.
Find it. So this time, though, with the Democratic House, the Democratic Senate, and that. Now, what we are waiting for, this is our mission. We are going to pass the $15 minimum wage.
Whether it makes sense or not. And here's another congressman from California, Representative Ro Khanna. And this is a perfect example of how economically foolish this is.
Well, of course, large businesses like Amazon and McDonald's, for example, can and perhaps should pay more. But I'm wondering, what is your plan for smaller businesses? How does this, in your view, affect mom and pop businesses who are just struggling to keep their doors open, keep workers on the payroll right now?
Well, they shouldn't be doing it by paying people low wages. We don't want low-wage businesses. I think most successful small businesses can.
You listen to that? We don't, meaning Democrats, we don't want low-wage businesses. They want those companies to go under. any mom and pop, I mean, he was specifically asked about mom and pop businesses that cannot afford to pay workers $15 an hour. And he said, we don't want them. This is the war on working people. You're hearing it in, you know, amazingly honest terms. We don't want those businesses. And then he said something
else. Pay a fair wage. If you look at the minimum wage, it increased with worker productivity until 1968, and that relationship was severed. If workers were actually getting paid for the value they were creating, it would be up to $23. So I love small businesses. I'm all for it. But I don't want small businesses that are underpaying employees. It's fair for people to be making what they're producing. And I think $15 is very reasonable in this country.
It's fair for people to be making what they're producing. No, no, it's not. I produce a lot more for Cairo and Bonneville than I make. That's why I'm a viable employee. The only time people, from a purely economic standpoint, their jobs will cease to exist is if they are being paid more than what they're producing. It's our job to, you know, make as much as we can and make money for our company over and above that. That's how it works. That's how companies end up with profits. Their workers produce more. But this guy says it's fair. It's always about fairness and feelings. It's fair for people to make what they produce. Absolutely not. Then no companies would make any profit whatsoever. And then secondly, this notion that, you know, as Pelosi would say, you know, nobody can afford to feed a family on whatever figure she gave. You're not supposed to feed a family on minimum wage. It's supposed to be a springboard, like it was for me and as it has been for millions and millions of other people. You know, we should all be striving to make ourselves as economically worthwhile as possible. But we're not, we don't deserve every penny that we produce, because then no jobs would exist or no companies would exist if they're not making any money. And you don't deserve to get paid to raise a family on minimum wage, because that's not what that job was designed to do. I'd love to hear what you think. Text me at 98973. That's 98973. Really good batch of awesome audio to kick off the week. Coming up next. The Dory Monson Show's awesome audio is brought to you by Davis Law Group. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. So Bill Gates is going to make an appearance in our awesome audio, but one of the things he talks about in his new How to Avoid a Climate Disaster book, I mentioned this briefly. He says that all richer nations like the United States should shift entirely to synthetic beef. And I've never tried synthetic beef. I've never tried those impossible burgers. I like beef. I like beef. Oh, man. A good porterhouse? Are you kidding me? I'm going to shift away from a good porterhouse? But then they point out, in this, he did an interview with Technology Review, and they point out that he mentioned several companies. Breakthrough Energy Ventures is his investment vehicle. And the companies he mentions, Beyond Meats, Impossible Foods, Memphis Meats, Carbon Engineering, Pivot Bio, he's an investor in a bunch of the companies. So when Bill Gates, it's just something you should know. Doesn't mean it's phony, but it doesn't mean it isn't. But he's telling all of us we should get on synthetic beef, and guess who's a major synthetic beef investor? Just wanted you to know about that. And with that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio. Clips of the day.
All right, one of the things Bill Gates talked about was that if we don't do something now, it's going to be worse than COVID. It's going to kill more people. It's going to be worse than the Syrian migration.
If we don't make it, if we don't get to zero net emissions by 2050, how will our daily lives be different?
Well, the migration that we saw out of Syria for their civil war, which was somewhat weather dependent, we're going to have 10 times as much migration because the equatorial areas will become unlivable. You won't be able to farm or go outside during the summer.
Okay, he says it was somewhat weather dependent, but it was more that the Syrian leader was gassing his own people. So, I mean, to suggest that that was a climate migration is a stretch at best. Also in our Awesome Audio, a couple of hours ago, I spoke live with a young woman named Laura Feet. She was jogging her daily jog in the morning in the Lake City neighborhood when all of a sudden a guy came up and attacked her, and she shared her story with us.
I was out on my regular run, and I was about 2 miles into it when somebody who came was behind me and covered my face with a sweatshirt and dragged me into the bushes. We struggled for not very long of a time. It was pretty brief, but I don't really remember very much of it, but he got up and I was able to get up and I saw him walking away, and he was somebody that I had passed a mile before on that same morning jog, and I recognized him from passing him earlier. I think he had been following me for a mile almost.
So he tracked her, chased her down, and she was able, she did everything right. She was kicking him. She was going for eyes, genitals, his stomach, trying to knock the wind out of him. She was screaming as loud as she could. But she said it's been emotionally challenging since then. I heard you tell Channel 7 some of the dark thoughts that have come into your mind since this happened. Can you share any of that with me?
Yeah, I realized how morbid they were.
They were pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't know what, I don't know. I have no experience with attacks or violent things in my life, except for what I've seen on true crime shows, and they're pretty crazy on true crime shows. So I was thinking, like, I'm being attacked right now and I'm in a bush and there's nobody around and I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. And then I was like, I don't know what to expect now. I don't know what happens on attacks, but I've seen true crime shows where like fingernails are being pulled off and crazy things. And so I was like, I wonder if that's what happens next.
And that attacker is still at large in the Lake City neighborhood. Number one in our Awesome Audio, Caleb Pendleton is a freshman at Florida Atlantic University, where they just started the college baseball season. This is the first at-bat of his college career, bases loaded. And there's more to this story than just this.
1-2. Pendleton, long drive, deep left field, going back to the wall, looking at it, fly away is Jostin.
Fly away? How's the Florida Atlantic student baseball play-by-play guy? He's stealing Dave Niehaus' line.
What a first at-bat for the true freshman, Caleb Pendleton, a grand slam.
Okay, but then, in the same inning, he came up again with the bases loaded.
He's back to the plate with the bases loaded again. Oh, my gosh. He has done it. Two grand slams in one inning.
Hey, kid, it's not that easy. Grand slam, his first two at-bats ever. It's a good start to his college career, though. Okay, that's going to do it for us. Tom and Curly Show's coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Hello.
Dave Ross on Seattle's Morning News.
There's an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal which says that we are closer to herd immunity than we know. Dr. Gordon Cohen.
What he's saying is about 1 in 600 Americans has died of COVID-19, population fatality rate of about 0.15%. But the COVID-19 infection fatality rate is 0.23%. These numbers actually suggest that roughly two-thirds of the United States population has actually already had the infection.
So the testing that's been done is testing the antibodies that are currently fighting the infection. Once those antibodies disappear, the T cells are left to remember that infection, but the tests do not reveal their existence.
That's correct.
Streaming live on the Cairo Radio app.
There has been a record number of gun sales over the last year, and even into January, there was another record broken. And that means there are probably a lot of new gun owners out there, and it is incumbent upon you to make sure that you're trained, to make sure you're trained for safety, the law, make sure that you can handle this, it's a right to own a gun, but it's a responsibility to make sure that you are as safe as possible. And my place for all of that is West Coast Armory North. They have classes. John and Stephanie are the owners, the range staff. They are all fantastic, and they are all safety advocates. It is my place for education, knowledge, to be safe, responsible, and educated. You go to westcoastarmorynorth.com. They have the range. You can sign up online. They have the store right adjacent as well. Go to westcoastarmorynorth.com.
At the UW Medicine Heart Institute, our experts provide a full range of heart care, from common to the most complex heart conditions that can't be treated elsewhere. Find cardiovascular care that works as hard as your heart does at multiple UW Medicine Heart Institute locations across the Puget Sound region. Learn more at uwmedicine.org/heart. UW Medicine, a higher degree of healthcare.
Rick Edelman, number one New York Times bestselling author and founder of Edelman Financial Engines, takes questions on his hit radio show. Let's listen to Rick help a caller who's saving for retirement.
Hey, Rick, how can I keep my retirement money safe?
By taking some risk. That sounds weird, I know, but when it comes to saving for retirement, if you try to keep your money safe, you're actually taking big risks. Savings accounts, well, they're not safe from inflation. They're not safe from taxes. There are, in fact, 18 different asset classes, and they all have different risks. So spread your money around so no one thing can wipe you out. It's like having 12 eggs in 12 baskets. Diversification helps you manage your risk while still giving you the opportunities provided by the financial markets.
That was award-winning radio host Rick Edelman. Get help diversifying your portfolio from one of our financial planners by calling 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit rickedelman.com.
Microban 24 protects against Staphylococcus aureus and Enterobacter aerogenes bacteria, but does not provide 24-hour protection against viruses. Every time you touch a surface, you leave behind bacteria. To keep surfaces sanitized all day, use Microban 24 sanitizing spray. Spray on hard surfaces to kill 99.9% of viruses and bacteria initially, including the virus that causes COVID-19. Once dry, Microban 24 sanitizing spray is effective for 24 hours on bacteria when used as directed.
Liberty. Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Well, as the world's blandest man, the idea of insurance made for me is almost riveting.
Big fan of beige?
I find other neutrals too unpredictable.
That's cool. Liberty Mutual's just here to protect your home with customized insurance.
And here we've got my doorstop collection.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
It's Rachel Bell, and if you're in the market for a new car, truck, SUV, or crossover, the place to be is Chevrolet Buick GMC of Puyallup. Trust me, I am not somebody who knows much about cars, but when I am at Chevrolet Buick GMC of Puyallup, the salespeople fill me in on everything I need to know. They are completely transparent, so you know that there are no tricks up their sleeves, and anyone who buys a new car is going to get oil and warranty for life. You'll really like everything at Chevrolet Buick GMC of Puyallup. Come experience the no stress way. Go to Chevrolet Buick GMC Puyallup.com.
KIRO-FM, Tacoma, Seattle.
Bells ringing at the National Cathedral in Washington as the nation marks the 500,000 lives lost to the COVID-19 pandemic. The cathedral sounding its bell 500 times, once for every 1,000 dead. They're holding a candlelight vigil this evening at the White House. It's